Click back. Do not reload. We have reconnected to Dimension 404.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. If this is your first time listening, Anthology is a podcast exploring science fiction anthology storytelling during television's first golden age, beginning with The Twilight Zone. But with Dimension 404 premiering on Hulu way back on April 4th, I'm covering each episode of Rocket Jump's Anthology sci-fi series in this bonus episode series. You can find more of Anthology at anthologypod.com. as well as a full archive of episodes at anthologypod.com/archive. And if you want to contact me, you can use the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod, tweet me at obsessiveviewer, or send me an email to matt@obsessiveviewer.com. If you like what you hear and you want to help support the podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. The ratings and reviews I get, help increase the visibility of the podcast on the internet in general, and really provide me with some great feedback, and makes it easier for people to find the show, essentially. And finally, if you want to show your support with your wallet, you can always do that by donating to Anthology by clicking the donate button in the show notes of the episode or at anthologypod.com. And also, you can go to the Obsessive Viewer Tee Public store, where you can get official Anthology and Obsessive Viewer merch and shirts. The t-shirts look really, really good. So just go to tpublic.com and type in Obsessive Viewer or obsessiveviewer.com in the search bar, and you'll find it there. Any donations and any purchases and anything, any support of any kind really is really appreciated, and all the monetary donations will be used, to help keep the podcast running and allow me to do what I do here. And, so today I will be discussing Polybius. It's the fourth episode of Dimension 404's first season that premiered on April 4th, April 4th, 2017 on Hulu. This episode is actually the first episode that aired after the first batch of episodes was released. So this one came out on, April 11th, I believe. And I am going to go ahead and read the plot summary real quick. And it's worth noting also that they haven't announced whether or not Dimension 404 will have a second season yet. There was a post on Facebook way back in April that purported to be an announcement for season two, but it turned out to be a hoax from a different non-official Dimension 404 page. So I don't know if they've... I don't know if they're going to have a second season. It hasn't been announced yet, but the show hasn't been officially canceled or anything by Hulu. So, we could get another one. I'm not sure. But, all right, I'm going to go ahead and read the plot summary from IMDb. A young arcade junkie attempts to master Polybius, a sinister new game of unknown origin that induces nightmarish visions. But when kids start dying, he must beat the game to unlock its deadly secrets. And it's worth noting that this plot, this entire episode, is based on an urban legend about a game called Polybius that was allegedly released discreetly in the suburbs of, Portland, Oregon, I think, back in the 80s. And that the legend goes that essentially... this game popped up in arcades around Portland, Oregon for about a month. And then throughout that time frame, people became obsessed with it. And people were lining up to play it in the arcades. And then they had men in black suits come in and, basically go through it and get data and everything. There was a lot of the legend goes, I should say, that they, that players of it became obsessed with it. And it was all this government conspiracy with subliminal messages to people playing the games and stuff. Hasn't been corroborated anywhere. It's an urban legend. It's likely not true. There's no evidence to speak of, about it, but it is a pretty pervasive urban legend in the, gaming community, from the sound of it. And starring in this episode is Ryan Lee as Andrew Myers. His credits include Super 8, This Is 40, and Goosebumps. And co-starring as Amy is Gabrielle Elise. She was in an episode of Modern Family and an episode of Black-ish. And rounding out the cast is Sterling Beaumont as Jess, who appeared in 5 episodes of Lost as the young version of Ben. Writer for this episode, writing credits for this episode are Des Dali and Will Campos, and director is Des Dali. Now, of course, going forward, I am going to be spoiling the episode Polybius. So if you haven't seen it yet, go over to Hulu and check it out, and then come back and listen to the review. So my initial thoughts when the episode first started is that I was kind of excited that it was an arcade episode. I hadn't heard anything about this Polybius urban legend or anything. I had no idea that it was a thing prior to seeing this episode. So I liked the introduction of the episode. The setup is really economic. I use that word a lot on this podcast, but it's a great condensed way to introduce the episode. That it's a period piece set in the '80s. It is an arcade centric episode with video games at the center of it. The main character, Andrew, is part of a family that is very religious, from the sound of it, and that he hides rolls of quarters in his Bible, like Shawshank Redemption style. I thought that was a nice touch. I wouldn't say that it didn't really track. It's just like it was a nice touch to the storyline. But I kept thinking, like, well, what if his dad finds it? Like, I mean, that's the Bible. Like, his dad is super religious. Like, wouldn't he find it in the Bible? But yeah, I just thought that was a nice touch and a nice reference to Shawshank Redemption, which is one of my favorite movies. And just from the outset, I really liked the tone of the episode. We get a scene with Andrew just playing the arcade games at Wilma's Arcade. And it's just, the aesthetic of it is very, it's a very slick episode and slick production style. You get a sense of like the synth music that's playing is very 80s, and the set decoration is very much steeped in the 80s. And then you get the introduction of Amy, who she, having just recently seen Black Mirror, it just reminded me, like, the way that she's dressed and everything just reminded me so much of San Junipero, that episode of Black Mirror. And then we get a kind of the first, not wrinkle in the story, but we get kind of a surprise in that the main character, Andrew, he's gay, and he's a closeted gay kid. And I thought that was really interesting, because we see him pining after Jess, who's his friend, and that's like that combined with the introduction of the plot line that he is an aspiring video game journalist in getting rejected because he doesn't have any new games, or he isn't writing about any new games. All of that is a really good setup for why Andrew is drawn to Polybius and why he wants to get out of Beaverton. Because the entire episode is just, he's just saying that he doesn't like the town that he's in because he doesn't, it's understandable because he can't be himself. He can't like open up and be himself or anything. He's hiding within himself. And that's just everything that is setting up the episode is just set up pretty well for this episode here. And then we get the introduction of Polybius as the game. And all of this is before the opening narration too, which I thought was pretty cool. But the introduction of Polybius is that it spits out a quarter to Andrew as he passes by it. And that kind of reminded me of the episode of the Twilight Zone, The Fever, with the one-armed bandit that's a sentient machine. And then that's when we get the narration by Mark Hamill where I chuckled at this. I probably shouldn't have chuckled that hard at it, but when he says, "Welcome to 1984-04, I thought, okay, that's sure. All right, I'll give you that. Good job, Rocket Jump. So we get a little bit more about Andrew's closeted homosexuality, and I just think that's a really interesting subject for the show to tackle. I honestly wasn't expecting something so serious to be depicted in this show. I mean, it's been kind of a campy sci-fi anthology show, and it's just like that's a pretty serious subject, and it's handled pretty nicely. So we get the introduction of the game. It's basically a maze game that he's being chased by a demon, or a demon is blocking his way, and he keeps moving in. That's how he racks up the high scores. And then we get a little piece of, we get a look at one of his, painful experiences in school, is that he's a freshman in high school and he, is afraid to shower after gym class. And so this scene was kind of, I wouldn't say confusing to me, but it didn't really track that well with me, that he is basically having a conversation with his friend Dennis, and so he and his friend are talking, and he's kind of giving Dennis this pep talk, like, just keep your head down and just keep going and you know, just let it go. And then the upperclassmen kind of corner him, and it's implied that they're sticking a finger up their ass. That's the implication that I'm gathering from it. And so Dennis is basically cornered, and Andrew flees and runs away and leaves him be. So that gets a scene or two later, it gets referenced when Dennis comes to the arcade and basically assaults Andrew and threatens him. And I thought that scene didn't really work for me that well, because like, we get the introduction of Dennis, like the one scene we get of him is that it seems like they're friends. It seems like Andrew and Dennis are friends. And then just the fact of Andrew leaving Dennis behind, it suddenly turns Dennis into essentially an antagonistic character, that it seemed kind of weird that we get the establishing scene of Dennis and Andrew as friends, which also is kind of confusing, because I guess not confusing, but we get the establishment that Jess is best friends with Andrew. And then we get this other friend character who they're talking in the locker room. And then suddenly after one discretion or one, transgression, Dennis pops up at the arcade as essentially just the same as the bullies. And that didn't really sit well with me, because like, he was the victim of bullying from the upperclassmen. And then the next scene we see him, the fact that Andrew abandoned him to be bullied turns him into the exact thing that he was a victim of. And it obviously makes sense that Dennis would be pissed at Andrew, but it didn't really make that much sense to me, or it didn't really track that well with me. And then previous to all of this, we get the introduction of the kid with the headgear, who threatens, he doesn't threaten Andrew, but he warns Andrew not to play Polybius because it'll eat his quarter. And, then after the Dennis in the arcade scene, we get the reveal that the headgear kid died, which I thought was kind of funny, because later in the episode, like the headgear kid is named, like, I think his name was Melvin, and later in the episode, Andrew refers to him as headgear kid. And I thought like, that was kind of weird and kind of funny. And I don't know. It made me laugh a little bit in a moment that, probably wasn't intended to be, I don't know if it wasn't intended to be comedic, but it was a pretty serious scene for him to reveal in that moment. So I like the character of Amy because she is this, I mean, she's kind of just a general quirky character, but I like that she is this, she's like the new kid in town who is not afraid to try to make friends, or she kind of seems a little quirky is the way that I would describe her essentially, but she's trying really hard to be friends with Andrew and Jess. And it's a little forced that she's part of like their group and everything in their group, but it's not, she's charming enough that it's, and quirky and charming enough that it works for the character and it works for the episode. And I really like the scene in the hallway of the high school where Amy is talking to Andrew and is just saying, she's implying that she knows, oh, that's what it was. She was going to defend Andrew by putting a dead animal in Dennis's locker. And so Andrew just says, no, don't worry about it. Just let it be and everything. And, his whole thing is that he wants to keep his head down and just get through it and everything because he wants to get out of the town and everything. But, she has deduced that he's gay, and she kind of implies that by saying like, well, he called you a terrible word, and that's a horrible thing to say, especially if someone's different. And Andrew just kind of discards her and says that he doesn't know what she's talking about. She needs to drop it. They're not friends and everything. And he just kind of recoils and gets into his shell essentially. But the line that I really liked was that she said, believe it or not, I like that she refers to him as Killscreen. I just think that that's a charming, like, nickname, and it comes up organically in the episode. But she says, believe it or not, Killscreen, I know about being different. Which I really like how that it's an understated thing because she's a minority, and it's an understated thing. And I really like how this episode deals with its subject matter, whether it's closeted homosexual or someone being a minority, and not fitting in. And it's just a really, I really like the way that it's dealt with essentially. So we get a lot of ominous things throughout the episode, and the whole idea of Polybius being this demon that is killing the kids that play the game. It's a pretty dark episode, but there's a scene where, Andrew, I believe he wakes from a nightmare when he sees Dennis. I don't think that's when he sees that, but he wakes from a nightmare and hears a noise in his closet, and he takes a plastic sword and lights it up and goes to defend himself, in his room. I thought that was funny and kind of nice. I don't know if there's anything to be said about that he's a closeted homosexual and he's going toward a dark closet that's housing a demon in it that he's going to confront. I don't know if there's something there intentionally or if I'm reading into it, but if whatever it is, it's a nice, bit of subtext for the episode. And then after that is the introduction of, the fact that the characters that play the game are branded with the, demonic Satan image and everything. And I really liked the makeup effect of that because, or it might have been digital, I don't know, but I really like the way that it's depicted because it looks really painful. Like it looks like they're branded. And I just really liked that. And then I think around that time is when, yes, that is when it's revealed that Dennis was killed, which I thought was with a little bit, not enough fanfare for that, I would say. It was just kind of like, oh, hey, Dennis is dead too. Okay. But there's a detective in the, in the school that I thought this was really funny because Andrew confronts him like next to the gym teacher and is like, oh, there's this video game that they're controlling people and they're killing the kids that play it and stuff. And I'm having these dreams and everything. And then so the detective is just such a dick to him, and has this, like, hands him a notebook, and it's like, here, it's like, he's very condescending, and it's like, this scene just worked for me as a bit of comedy. But he's just like, why don't you go ahead and write down all your scary dreams and all of your everything you say, and then you write them down here and give it to your mom and dad, and they can help you with it. It's just, I loved that scene. Both times that I watched this episode, I was cracking up at that. And then after that is the introduction of Ken Forey, which I was very pleased to see him in this episode, because the original Dawn of the Dead is one of my favorite movies, just in general. And I like the way that Ken Forey is this ominous character. He reminded me a lot of, at least in that specific scene, this in the school, he reminded me a lot of Tony Todd from Final Destination. Kind of this all-knowing, kind of ominous character with like a very deep voice, and who knows more than what he's letting on in it. It's I thought it was really good. Really good performance from Ken Forey. He's 69 years old, and he looks really good for his age. Like, I was surprised by that. So then we get, after that, there's a scene with Andrew at home, where his father is telling him that he needs to pray, or he asks what he's doing, and he says, "Oh, I'm saying my prayers." But I want to kind of point out that scene, because I really like the way that the father character is depicted in the episode. He's kind of like a Peanuts adult character, where like we only hear his voice through the door. And I mean, it might as well be like a gibberish thing, like in Peanuts and Charlie Brown. But, I like how uninvolved it is. It kind of plays to the kind of the 80s, teen sci-fi movie motif, I guess, that they're going for. Kind of reminds me of like how it's like a kid adventure story. So like the adults aren't really that integral to the plot. They're kind of uninvolved, and it's just basically strictly the kid's perspective. And I like that. And then we get the religious element of it that Andrew has kind of taken. He's using his religious upbringing and everything to figure out that Polybius is. He goes into the whole backstory of a saint that was used as the muse for artists to create art in God's image, and then God took credit for it. So then Polybius got mad and had an artist create, I'm going off of memory, had an artist create art in his image, in Polybius' image, and then God cast him out and everything. I thought that was a really nice angle to bring to the episode, and a really nice bit of backstory for the episode, and it fit well with Andrew's character, because he would know that information since he was in a strictly religious family. And at that point, the episode kind of feels like Stranger Things by way of Rocket Jump, like Rocket Jump's I guess not answer to Stranger Things, because at this time the episode would have been, the show was in production before Stranger Things had premiered. It went into production, I believe, June and July of last year, in 2016, and like months before Stranger Things premiered. So it's a nice coincidental tone that both this episode and Stranger Things struck, very much 80s kid movie thing, or not kid movie, but 80s supernatural thing. So it kind of just, it reminds me of Stranger Things. And if you like Stranger Things, you would likely enjoy this episode of Dimension 404, because it's kind of right in that same wheelhouse. And at this point, the first time watching this episode, it was like 1 a.m. On a, I think, Friday night. And I was only halfway through the episode, and I was just kind of, it was starting to feel its runtime a little bit. I was really enjoying it. I was liking the episode a lot so far. And in the moment, I really thought, and still think so far, that visually speaking, it's Dimension 404's most striking episode. But I kind of at that point just kind of wanted it to at least get propelled, like the momentum to get going, or for the episode to just kind of be over with. Again, that may have been because it was 1 a.m. when I was watching it and I was tired. But when I on my repeat viewings, I kind of felt that too at that point. It was kind of lagging just a little bit. And when they kind of, when they're in the arcade and they're making their plans to figure out what they're doing, and they're kind of going through the idea of taking down Polybius, I got kind of an Are You Afraid of the Dark vibe from the 90s. Like, I kind of really got that vibe from it. And so they decide to, Jess, Andrew, and Amy decide to go through records and everything and try to figure out where this came from. And that's when we get this really sweet scene between Amy and Andrew, where Amy just kind of levels with him and she's like, I think that you and Jess would be a cute couple, and I know you don't want to talk about it, but I'm just saying, hey, I think you guys would be a cute couple. And then, like, that's such a sweet, tender scene between the two characters, and I really like the response to Andrew being like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about or whatever, or I don't think he is interested in me. Like he says that he doesn't think that Jess is interested in me, and then Amy just says he sorts your mail. and I thought that was a really sweet scene, even though it leads to a very painfully awkward scene, which I'll get to in just a second, because the next scene is Andrew going into the back office where Jess is going through the records and everything. And this scene in particular didn't work for me because it just seemed a little too off and a little too weird and out of place to me, because there's this whole big thing where he sees a character at the desk with their head on the desk, and he thinks that it's Jess for a second. So he's like creepily going up to it, and then he turns on the light and nope, it's Wilma, the owner of the arcade, slumped over her desk, with a drink next to her. And it's weird to me because Jess comes up and says that she's sleeping, but I mean, her eyes are open and the snores, there's like a snoring sound effect, and like they're talking very, like they're not whispering exactly, and they don't bother to turn off the light or anything. It was just a very strange scene, and I kind of wonder if maybe it was originally going to be that Wilma was dead, and that maybe they ADR'd in dialogue and snoring sound effects to make it look like she's, or to make it, to change it to her just being asleep. I have no notes or anything to corroborate this or anything. It's just a feeling that I get from the way the scene unfolds, because there's no real explanation about why she's just slumped over her desk and apparently asleep. There's no explanation about why she's there, why she's asleep, or why she sleeps with her eyes open or anything. It was just a really weird scene, but it didn't detract too much from the episode. But then we get the big scene with Andrew and Jess, where Andrew tries to kiss him, and it's so painfully awkward and just cringeworthy, like how he gets rejected. It's just, you really feel for Andrew in that moment. It's just really, it was painful to watch. And so they tie up Ken Forey, because Ken Forey comes into the arcade, and then they tie him up and everything, and then he suddenly gets killed by Wilma, and that's the big reveal that Wilma is like the big bad of the episode. And we get a lot of really good backstory and everything. Like, I really like the motivation of the Wilma character, because she's saying that she created Polybius, and she sees what Polybius does to humans, and she doesn't want him to do it to her. So that's why she's facilitating Polybius to murder a bunch of kids in random towns. Like, it's a despicable thing, but it's just, it's a really interesting motivation for it. It's not that she's not like possessed by the demon or anything per se. She's just like, hey, I know that he's, you know, I know that he's killing a bunch of people in very, very grotesque and terrible ways. I just don't want to die. I thought that was really cool. And so she gets them all tied up and everything. And then Amy sort of dies, which I was shocked at first, but then they kind of reverse it later. And I thought that that was kind of, I wouldn't say cheap, because it fits with the tone of the episode and the kind of the trio, it works that they get back together. But in that moment where she gets her soul sucked out of her, it would have been more impactful if she was dead for real. But it did propel us into a scene where Andrew and Jess are fleeing the arcade, and then Andrew puts Jess into the same situation that he found himself in with Dennis in the locker room. It's kind of a reversal there. Like, Andrew and Jess are going to flee, and then Andrew stops and he's just like, no, I'm not going to run away this time. I'm tired of hiding. That's maybe my favorite scene of the episode, is that he's just leveling with Jess and saying like, hey, people are going to die. We're going to die either way. People are going to keep dying because of this, and I'm tired of hiding, and I just want to be myself, and I just want to get through this. And he even says, like, I love you, Jess, but I know that you don't feel the same way, and that's okay, but I can't just keep running, and I can't keep hiding who I am. It's like, it's a very impactful scene. Like, it's a big moment for both characters and for the episode itself. And then the way that they resolve the actual plot is that they go into the game, essentially, which I thought was kind of weird, but I like the visual effects of it. And so I thought that was fine, but they go into like the heart of the game, and Andrew goes first, and like his whole idea is that he needs to get a kill screen to destroy the game and thereby destroy the demon and everything. And we get a suspenseful moment where he's looking at the game and trying to break the game. When Jess just pops up, and it like, it's kind of silly and kind of weird. And we get this whole like, just saying, like, I thought about what you said, and like reiterating essentially the point that was made by Andrew, and to show that they're in the same level. And I thought that was, I mean, it was okay. It was just a little distracting. But it fit well with the climax of the episode, because Jess, like lured the beast toward him so that Andrew would get the kill screen. And of course, he only has one quarter, so that makes it suspenseful too. But yeah, I thought that was a good way to resolve the plot, because he has to get a kill screen to destroy the game, and then he's all good. It tracks well with the episode. And then, of course, at the end of it, everyone's happy, everything's good to go, and everyone's back to normal. But the thing, like, and it's a little cheesy at the end with the big group hug, and they have to carry Andrew out. They have to carry Andrew out, but it doesn't really make sense, because it didn't really show that he wasn't injured at all. Like, there was no explanation of why they have to carry him out. I thought that was kind of silly. But maybe my biggest issue is that there's no real resolution to the Wilma plot, because Amy just knocks her out after she comes back to life, and she just knocks her out, and then they're like, all right, let's go home, and let's not play any video games anymore. But I was just like, do they call the authorities? Like what happens with Wilma? Cause they didn't kill her. She's just knocked out from the baseball bat. It's like, I kind of found myself, and this is nitpicking, I'm sure, but I was just thinking, like, why, like, that doesn't end the, like, that doesn't, like, she just murdered someone in front of you. Yeah, it kind of made me wonder, like, what's next? Like, how do they resolve that? But there was no explanation for that. But it's all fine, because over the end credits, and I'm not being facetious at all, because I genuinely enjoy this, but over the end credits, we get this really cool 80s synth music playing, and I really liked it. It brought me into the period of the episode. The music throughout the entire episode is just really fantastic, and I really enjoyed it. Yeah, and that's pretty much Polybius. Honestly, even though it has its shortcomings and has its confusing moments and some things that didn't track, I honestly think that this is, I don't know if I would say the best episode of Dimension 404 yet, but it is one of the more enjoyable ones that I've seen, and it's visually it's the best looking one in my opinion. There are moments where the special effects are kind of cheesy, like the actual Polybius like beast effect is kind of a little bit silly, but like there's a moment where Andrew is playing Polybius before the big like showdown at the end, but he's playing it and then it's like the walls of the game come like shoot past him and he becomes like in the game, and it's showing visually like how he is very much entranced by the game and he's playing it. And just, that's a really cool visual technique to show in the episode. And I thought that it was done well. So visually it's the strongest episode of Dimension 404, and also the subtext of this kid who's closeted homosexual who kind of hates what his station in life is. Like he hates, that he can't get out of this town and he hates everything about the town. He's just a very much an uncomfortable, angry kid who's learning to, you know, accept who he is and where he is. And with the help of his friends, it's a good, strong episode in that respect. So, I mean, maybe it would be my favorite episode now that I'm saying it out loud, even though it has some issues here and there, but it was the one that I'm more likely to go back and watch again, at this point. But I still have two episodes left, and that'll actually pretty much do it for this bonus episode now that I'm saying it out loud. Yeah, so that is it for this bonus episode. Next time in my bonus episode series, I'm going to be doing a review of Bob, the penultimate episode of Dimension 404. And then on the main feed, we're going to be doing a review of The Howling Man from season 2 of The Twilight Zone, which I'm really excited about because that was a really, really good episode. And I'm really looking forward to reviewing that one. And the bonus review for that episode is going to be Ex Machina, one of my favorite sci-fi movies that came out in the last couple years. And then after that, we're going to be doing Eye of the Beholder, which will be a huge episode for me because it's a big episode of The Twilight Zone, and I'm hoping I can, you know, review it with some justice. And also keep forgetting to mention this, if you're in the Indianapolis area, come to Shocktober in Irvington, one night event screening of short horror films from local filmmakers. I will put a promo in the at the end of this episode. If you buy your tickets and you use the promo code podcast2, you'll get $1 off the price of admission. So go check that out at shocktobernirvington.com. And finally, I did launch a third podcast under the obsessiveviewer.com umbrella. Me and Tiny, who co-hosts Obsessive Viewer with me, we launched a podcast devoted to Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower. The podcast is called Tower Junkies. We're basically just talking all things Dark Tower and Stephen King. We're going to have book reviews of each book in the series, and we're going to go kind of part by part in each book of the Dark Tower series. But we're also going to be talking about the adaptation. We're going to be talking about the connected books in Stephen King's work that connect back to the Dark Tower. And we're going to also do just general conversations about the Dark Tower, about Stephen King. And we're going to also be reviewing other Stephen King books and movies and shows that aren't directly tied to the Dark Tower. So go check that out. It's called Tower Junkies. You can find it at towerjunkiespod.com. That'll do it for this bonus episode of Anthology. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Tickets are on sale now for the 4th annual Shocktober in Irvington, presented by The Obsessive Viewer Podcast. Join the hosts of The Obsessive Viewer on October 6th, 2017 at the Irving Theater for a one-night event screening of short horror films, including the premiere screenings of the latest film in J.P. Lex's cross-medium Elsewhere World Universe, the latest film from Snapshot Productions, and much more. Come celebrate the horror genre in the historic Irvington area and meet the filmmakers with live Q&As after each screening. You can also win DVDs and Blu-rays, movie-related party games, horror-themed Funko Pop figures, gift cards to Irvington businesses, and so much more. Tickets are on sale now at shocktoberinirvington.com. All proceeds go directly to the Irvington Historical Society. And whether at the Irving Theater or in your nightmares, we will be seeing you on the 6th of October.
Thank you for listening to Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For more of Anthology and a full archive of my episodes, go to AnthologyPod.com. And if you want to help support the show, the easiest way you can do that is by leaving a rating and a review on iTunes. You can also make donations to the show courtesy of the donate link in the show notes of each episode and on AnthologyPod.com. For recurring donations, you can become a patron at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer and just choose one of the Anthology reward tiers. If you enjoy Anthology, feel free to check out The Obsessive Viewer, a weekly movie and TV podcast I host with my friend Tiny and occasional guest co-hosts over at ObsessiveViewer.com. You can also join The Obsessive Viewer Facebook group at facebook.com/TheObsessiveViewer. For book reviews and commentary on the world of reading, check out our sister site at obsessivebooknerd.com. And for philosophical discussions from a secular viewpoint, check out my friends Chad and Amanda at thesecularperspective.com. Finally, if you'd like to contact me with your thoughts on the show, my reviews, my bonus reviews, or for any other reason, you can tweet me at obsessiveviewer, send me an email at matt@obsessiveviewer.com, or send me a message on Facebook and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod. Once again, thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.